This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show. Another hour of the Jesse Kelly Show on a fantastic Monday. Of course, it's Medal of Honor Monday, which I'll get to in just a moment. Then we're going to get to actually something that's happening in here and Germany. I'll explain. I'll get to all that. Just trust me, it'll be good. All that and so much more still to come on the Jesse Kelly Show. Now, first, before we do any of that, it's Medal of Honor Monday time. Every Monday, we take a Medal of Honor citation, we read it, talk about it a little, and then we get back to the news and emails and everything else. But I do get emails from time to time of people wondering why the Medal of Honor citations all seem to come from World War II, Korea, Vietnam, or kind of the global war on terror, right? A lot of people seem to wonder, hey, why nothing older? Jesse, where's the Civil War stuff? Where's the Spanish Civil War stuff? The Spanish-American War, I'm sorry. Where's the World War I stuff? We get a lot of those questions. So Chris had the idea, I think it's a pretty good idea, to read one. Don't worry, I'll get to a different one. This isn't going to be the only one. But would you like to know why we don't read the ones older than World War II? Allow me to introduce an American hero who deserves all the credit in the world. He was actually born in Germany, but became an American. Fought with the U.S. Navy in the Spanish-American War. So without further ado, Chris, would you play the music for a United States Navy Gunner's Mate Third Class, John Davis?
Ready, aim, fire.
Honoring those who went above and beyond, it's Medal of Honor Monday.
On board the USS Marblehead during the operation of cutting the cable leading from Cienfuegos, Cuba, the 11th of May, 1898. Facing heavy fire of the enemy, Davis set an example of extraordinary bravery and coolness throughout his action.
That's it. That's it for the citation. That's why we don't read the older ones. And maybe you're thinking, well, at least go get the information and tell you. Well, that's the thing. If I sound frustrated, it's because I am frustrated. Oftentimes, it's not available. We are so used to this information age. At least I am. I shouldn't put words in your mouth. I'm so used to the information age that when I want to know something, it's on my phone. I was actually messing with my car over the weekend. I had to spend a little time under the hood. And, you know, I don't like to brag. What, Chris? I had to put in more windshield washer fluid. Anyway, I had to spend some time under the hood, and I had a question about something. I just pulled my phone out and looked it up. No, I didn't have a question about putting in the windshield washer fluid, Chris. I was curious when I was tweaking the wrenches and stuff under there. I was curious about this. Anyway, I just looked it up on my phone. All the information was right there. We're used to having the information right there. The older stuff is oftentimes not around. So without further ado, let's do the real one. This is from the United States. Well, not that one wasn't real. That was disrespectful. Let's do a longer one. This is one that you will know well. It's from Mogadishu, Somalia, during our operations over there. And this is the Medal of Honor citation for a Gary Ivan Gordon. You know he was one of the Delta Force snipers that did something very, very brave that day.
Ready, aim, fire.
Honoring those who went above and beyond, it's Medal of Honor Monday.
Master Sergeant Gary I. Gordon, United States Army, distinguished himself by action above and beyond the call of duty on the 3rd of October, 1993, while serving as a sniper team leader, United States Army Special Operations Command with Task Force Ranger in Mogadishu, Somalia. Master Sergeant Gordon's sniper team provided precision fires from the lead helicopter during an assault,
and at the two helicopter crash sites while subjected to intense automatic weapons and rocket-propelled grenade fires. When Master Sergeant Gordon learned that ground forces were not immediately available to secure the crash site, he and another sniper unhesitatingly volunteered to be inserted to protect the four critically wounded personnel. Despite being well aware of the growing number of enemy personnel closing in on the site, after his third request to be inserted, Master Sergeant Gordon received permission to perform his volunteer mission. When debris and enemy ground fires at the site caused him to abort the first attempt, Master Sergeant Gordon was inserted 100 meters south of the crash site. Equipped with only his sniper rifle and a pistol, Master Sergeant Gordon and his fellow sniper, while under intense small arms fire from the enemy, fought their way through a dense maze of shanties and shacks to reach the critically injured crew members. Master Sergeant Gordon immediately pulled the pilot and other crew members from the aircraft, establishing a perimeter which placed him and his fellow sniper in the most vulnerable position. Master Sergeant Gordon used his long-range rifle and sidearm to kill an undetermined number of attackers until he depleted his ammunition. Master Sergeant Gordon then went back to the wreckage, recovering some of the crew's weapons and ammunition. Despite the fact that he was critically low on ammunition, he provided some of it to the dazed pilot and then radioed for help. Master Sergeant Gordon continued to travel the perimeter, protecting the downed crew. After his team member was fatally wounded and his own rifle ammunition exhausted, Master Sergeant Gordon returned to the wreckage, recovering a rifle with the last five rounds of ammunition and gave it to the pilot with the words, "Good luck." Then, armed with only his pistol, Master Sergeant Gordon continued to fight until he was fatally wounded. His actions saved the pilot's life. Master Sergeant Gordon's extraordinary heroism and devotion to duty were in keeping with the highest standards of military service and reflect great credit upon him, his unit, and the United States Army. And he gave his life for this country. You know what I've always thought was really awesome, awe-inspiring, really impressive is how many guys have given their lives for pilots and helicopter crews and things like that that have gone down in hostile territory. A lot of this is special operations guys. Rangers do some of this stuff like that. But I think about the SOG guys in Vietnam used to do this stuff all the time. I mean, look, it's something that happens in the military, but sometimes on these missions, everyone will be dead where you're going. You're going to risk your life to rescue people who lots of times they're all already dead. But it means so much to the men to get their bodies back and to bring them back that men will die in the effort to try to bring people back. And you already know the story because you're well aware of Black Hawk Down, but those two Delta Force guys in that helicopter, they were above and they were safe, relatively safe. Okay, not super safe. You can always catch a round from somebody. But where they were flying in that helicopter above all that, they were not right down by the ground. They were safe up by where they were. And those helicopters went down. These two studs practically demanded they be set down. And I've read stories like that before. I read one over the weekend of a Green Beret who his buddy was on the ground, and his buddy told the helicopter pilot, "Leave me. I'm not going to make it." This is in Vietnam. The Green Beret who was still in the helicopter held a gun to the back of the pilot's head and said, "You set it down now. We're going to get him." And he made him at gunpoint go down. "No, we're going to get my friend." That's awesome. And a lot of men have died going to do that stuff. And I've just always really admired it. I think it's really awesome. All right. Let's discuss something that's happening here and something that's happening in Germany. I know you don't really care about Germany, but I'm just going to use it as an example. Before we get to that, let's get to preborn. Let's get to something good and wonderful. It's been heavy and dark. Preborn is the light. A young mother. Is there anything more precious and wonderful than a young mother? And think about this concept. A young woman, she's about to kill her baby. Preborn comes alongside her and says, "Hey, why don't you come in for a free ultrasound?" They have this network of clinics in the high abortion areas in the country. When that young woman goes in, if they can get her in the door and she gets the ultrasound, she chooses life almost every single time. Goes from being a young woman who's about to do something she'll regret the rest of her life to being a mom. A young mom. What's better than that? And that's what you do when you give to preborn. And it's almost ridiculous that it's tax deductible. I'd tell you about preborn if it wasn't, but you give them whatever you want and deduct it on your taxes? Preborn.com/Jesse. $28 buys that ultrasound. $28 for a life. That worth it? Preborn.com/Jesse. Sponsored by Preborn. We'll be back.
Jesse Kelly returns next.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a wonderful Monday, and we're about to talk about something. It may take me a few minutes, but you have to stay with me. This is going to come to the Trump executive order saying, hey, no more government money for NPR, no more government money for PBS and things like that. But before we get to that specifically, let's discuss what has happened to our country. So I want you to think about it in this way. I want you to think about your house, or we'll do my house for the purposes of it. My house. Ab and I, we budget. We have a budget. Don't think it's anything fancy. It's an Excel spreadsheet. Probably the same kind of budget. We all know Chris budgets, but I'm sure Corey budgets. It's a budget. And it has on mine same thing that's on yours. Okay, well, the car payment's this, and the house payment is that. So you have this long list of necessities that are going to come out every month. Insurance, and the exact same kind of thing. But then everybody, if you're smart, you have extras built into your budget that aren't necessities. For instance, me, chips. I say chips, but we make it about any kind of junk food. Let's just make it about chips, though. We'll make it about Doritos for now, okay? Doritos. That's obviously not a necessity, so it doesn't go into the permanent portion of my budget. It's one of those things that I can do or do without, depending on whether or not money's coming in. You got it. Same thing. But here's what's happened to the United States of America. You see, I don't want my Doritos to be optional. In my mind, my Doritos are as important to our home as the car payment, the house payment. They're certainly as important as the kids. We should make my Doritos part of the permanent budget. It shouldn't be in the extra budget. And so year after year after year after year after year, I've been working on OB and working on OB and working on OB. And finally, I've gotten to the place where the permanent family budget has a specific amount of money dedicated to my Doritos every month, and it's not optional. Okay, by the way, I haven't done that. But just think about how ridiculous that would be, right? That is what has happened with American communism when it comes to the budget of the United States of America. You see, politics, Republican or Democrat, are supposed to be separate. I know it's weird, but they're supposed to be separate from the government.
once you have an official government role, once you are the president, you don't get to politic on behalf of Democrats. Not when you're doing the job of president, right? I know that's kind of, the president makes it weirder, but for instance, when you're running for Congress, or if you're in Congress, if you are a member of Congress, a member of the House of Representatives, did you know you are not allowed to discuss your congressional campaign or anyone else's congressional campaign while inside the congressional offices? Why? Well, those are taxpayer-funded offices. While you're in there, you're not campaigning, you're not a candidate, you're not helping anyone else campaign. Your job, once you've been elected, is simply to represent the people. The politics, the getting elected and all that stuff has to be separate. That's how it has to work in a country. But if you're an American communist, well, that doesn't work for you. You're looking for a level of permanence, if you will. You don't want your Doritos to be optional. You don't want your communism to be optional. You want to find a way to guarantee that the United States government will pay for your communism at all times, now and forever. And the sad part about that is, over years and years and years and years and years, they've been insanely successful in that endeavor. American communists have ensured over years and years that we, the American taxpayer, will fund them, fund their revolution. Why did Stacey Abrams' climate group get a $2 billion taxpayer check? That's why. They've put this system in place. So Trump comes out, puts out this presidential order that says, hey, no more taxpayer money for NPR, PBS. That's just not good. Everyone knows those are like the most two left-wing organizations ever. How did the media respond to this kind of stuff?
Yeah, it is a fundamental attack on...
This is Jonathan Capehart.
Yeah, it is a fundamental attack on our Constitution, on the foundation of this country. People need to understand and remember.
Just pause on that for a moment. Think about that way of thinking. Taking taxpayer funds away from NPR and PBS to Jonathan, that's an attack on the Constitution? Do you see? I'll let him go in a moment, but do you see what they've done in their minds and in the minds of so many Democrats? Democrats, they really think that the government should use your money for their purposes. And you can hold up NPR as an example and point out how left-wing it is and then point out the taxpayer dollars that go to NPR, and you wouldn't get a Democrat to bat an eye because in their minds, well, that's how it's supposed to work. And if you're trying to take away the taxpayer money from my stuff, then my goodness, it's unconstitutional. Yeah,
it is a fundamental attack on our Constitution, on the foundation of this country. People need to understand and remember, there is only one profession that is protected in the Constitution.
Listening to him talk reminds me, have you gotten your testosterone levels checked? Do you want to sound like Jonathan Capehart? If your T levels get any lower, you're going to. America's losing testosterone at an alarming rate. 50% in 50 years. It's in the water. We can't. What do we do? Well, I know in response to this, of course, we've done the worst thing possible. There's a new T clinic on every corner. Don't do that. That's horrible for you, and you don't need it. Fix things naturally. Get all your levels where they need to be naturally. That's what Chalk is here for. Go to choq.com real quick. You know, I'm not even telling you to buy anything. Go look at chalk.com, choq.com, and go look at the stuff they have. Whatever you're looking for, they have an incredible natural herbal supplement to make your life better. I personally take a male vitality stack every day. It's what I'd recommend for the fellas, or a female vitality stack for the ladies. Get a subscription. You'll be feeling better before you know it. choq.com, promo code Jesse. We'll be back.
Jesse Kelly.
Ole! And happy Cinco de Mayo once again from us to you here at the Jesse Kelly Show. And remember, if you want to email us, you can jesse@jessekellyshow.com, celebrating as only we can. So they're very, very concerned about the potential for taxpayer money being taken away from PBS, NPR. Jake Tapper doesn't know how kids are going to learn how to read.
Speaker Johnson has said he would additionally like to cut funding for public broadcasting, PBS, which does report does receive some support from the federal government. It's interesting. I just have to say, on a personal level, I learned to read by watching Sesame Street and Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood and The Electric Company. That's literally how I learned to read as a kid. Sesame Street.
Literally how you learned to read. But we'll set aside the literally thing. But that's funny because they're not teaching that the way they used to. In fact, this is what your child learns now when you sit them down for Sesame Street. Remember what we talked about with the Doritos and slowly moving it into the permanent family budget and how America's communists have slowly, over the years, taken their communism and ingrained it in the government so you have to pay for it? This is what your money funds now.
Across the country, people of color, especially in the black community, are being treated unfairly because of how they look, their culture, race, and who they are. What we are seeing is people saying enough is enough. They want to end racism.
No, I'm almost to end racism too.
Oh, you didn't think that was all. Here's some more Sesame Street.
Hi, Elmo and I wanted to share that everyone is always welcome on Sesame Street. This month and every month, we want to uplift and celebrate our LGBTQIA+ family, friends, and communities.
Yeah, that's right, Miss Ariana. From our Sesame Street family to yours, happy Pride! Elmo loves you.
Happy Pride! On that annoying voice. You know what happened in Germany? Germany has a party called the AfD party. Don't worry about remembering that, but it's kind of, consider them the more Trump party, the more populist, let's deport the illegals party. Their spy agency just classified them as being right-wing extremists. Now, German police officers who are members of that party may be expelled. You see, what's happening here is what has happened in every single country where communists have taken over. They slowly but surely move their opinions and make them the law. They move their politics and they make it the law. And they do that in large part so they can use all the force of the law against their political opponents. It's happened in Germany before, as a matter of fact. It happened in the Soviet Union. It's happening in America. It's happening in Germany again. It's happening everywhere. This is what they do. This is why they do what they do. Moving the Doritos from the optional portion of the family budget into the required portion of the family budget. Jake Tapper, of course, knows that. He knows that. The American media knows that. But watching the scam be exposed and taken away, it's too much for the people who have luxuriated under the scam for a very long time. Let's do some more emails. We haven't done any. Jesse@jessekellyshow.com. This guy says, hey, ice cold ghost killer, do you like sunflower seeds? I think your perfect teeth, cheap nature, and tiny hands would make them the ideal snack for the world famous Jesse Kelly. I don't like sunflower seeds that much. And here's the problem. One, it's a lot of work to get the seed out. I don't want to have to sit in. I don't want to have to suck on it for a half hour. And then you have to wait till the shell gets soft enough. But then once the shell's soft enough, the inside of your mouth is raw. It feels like leather. Then you have to sit there and kind of awkwardly gnaw on the seed. And then you're trying to tongue the little seed out. And your buddies are looking at you weird. Oh, and if you are successful in getting the seed out, which is a big if, and if you're successful in not chewing on part of the shell with the seed, Again, a big if. Then you have what to do with the shell. We went to a baseball game a couple weeks ago. This isn't about sunflower seeds specifically, but at the baseball game, they sell peanuts like any red-blooded American baseball game would be. We go to sit down in our seats, and there were some people who were sitting in our seats, some husband and wife. Whatever, no, we did. We said, hey, these are our seats. I said, oh, they looked down, did the same thing everyone else does, acted surprised, and they got up and moved down the aisle. They were in the same aisle. They were like five seats away. But he had been eating the peanuts. The peanuts you have to crack. You have to crack open from the peanut shell. He left behind an ocean of cracked peanut shell dust all over my seat, in the floor in front of it. I don't like the mess that the sunflower seed brings with it. I just don't like the mess. No, I'm not a sunflower seed guy. It's not that I don't like them. I mean, they're fine once you get one out of there. The juice is not worth the squeeze on a sunflower seed. Bottom line. Jesse, I appreciate you for a couple reasons. One, I agree with you on near everything. And two, you are so positive in a day when it's easy to be negative, even when the news is sickening. So thank you. It's not that I guess sometimes I can be positive, sometimes I can be negative. I just don't think, I'll tell you what I think about the times we live in. I don't think they're unique. They're unique to us, and they may be unique to our country, I would agree with that. But one of the reasons I love history is it gives me perspective. When I read about, remember that story? Remember that history story we did about the Great Flood of China that one time? It was a long time ago. Don't even bother going to try to find it. I don't even know where it would be. It's got to be years old. And look, I've forgotten most of it by this point, but there was this terrible flood in China. This river overflowed. Now, we're not talking about a flood that took out a home or two, and we're not talking about a month or two. Essentially, a bunch of people in China, when this flood happened, they lived in, have you ever seen the movie Waterworld, where there is no dry land? There's just nothing but whatever you cobble together as a boat, and you live on the water like water people. That's what you do. That's how people in China were living. And they reached such a level. Chris, look up the death toll for this thing. They reached such a level of devastation during this river flood, that families who were floating on makeshift rafts and boats up the river, they would sell their children. They would pick a child and sell the child to other people, to other boats who were passing by, so that other boat could eat their child. Now, I know I just bumped the microphone, Chris. It'll be fine. Now, just think about that for a moment. The level of despair and desperation. And this is not some crazy story. It's happened. These things have happened throughout history. So when I look at our problems, it's not that they're not big. They're enormous, and they are important. It's just, what choice do we have but to roll with the punches, man? Let's laugh a little bit, goof off a little bit. I was going to do some COVID stuff with parents. I don't even have the heart to. Let's talk a little bit about Alcatraz being reopened, according to Trump. And then we'll do some emails and things like that. Sound good? Hang on.
Jesse Kelly returns next.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a fantastic Monday. Remember, you can email the show, jesse@jessekellyshow.com, or download it on iHeart, Spotify, iTunes. Okay, so let's talk about the Alcatraz thing. Everybody's talking about it today, and it's not something you need to focus on at all, but Trump orders the reopening of Alcatraz. Alcatraz prison. It's obviously that famous prison off the coast of San Francisco. It was for the worst of the worst inmates. Al Capone was held there for a while. You've at least seen enough movies to know exactly what I'm talking about. Alcatraz. Actually, I've never been to it, as a matter of fact, but it's cool. It's really, really cool. It's an island prison. Now, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this because it's really not important. But if you're one of the people who's upset about it and you're pointing out, I don't like the cost, or I don't like the distraction, or I don't like this, allow me to remind you again that Trump, he's been shot. This is his last 4 years. He is either 80 or pushing 80. Is he 80 yet, Chris? He's got to be close to it. He's upper 80s. Doesn't have a ton of time left yet. Even if he lives, you know, into his 90s, you're certainly on the back end of the whole thing. Donald Trump has his name on buildings and golf courses around the globe. He is the once shot former and current president of the United States of America. He's going to try to do big things. Like we talked about with the buying Greenland stuff and renaming the Gulf of Mexico into the Gulf of America and taking back the Panama Canal and the trade stuff. The trade stuff is actually a great example of this. The trade stuff, all the trade stuff, tariff this and tariff that, no tariffs, but we need tariff, whatever. Donald Trump intends to leave a mark, a big mark, and he's going to do big things. Remember when I told you Trump's 250th Independence Day? That's next year. Next year's our 250th, that Trump is going to blow it out and do it bigger than you can imagine. Did you think I was kidding about that?
We're going to have a big, beautiful parade.
A military parade?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
We're going to celebrate our military. We have the greatest military in the world.
What's the price tag?
Peanuts compared to the value of doing it. We have the greatest missiles in the world. We have the greatest submarines in the world. We have the greatest army tanks in the world. We have the greatest weapons in the world. And we're going to celebrate it.
Donald Trump sees things big. He's always been that way. What do you think he's going to do with his last 4 years as president? He's not running again. He's going to try big things. Don't sit and stress about dumb things that don't matter at all. And don't stress about Ilhan Omar being a dirtball either. I know she is. You know she is.
I would say our country should be more fearful of white men across our country, because they are actually causing most of the deaths within this country. And so if fear was the driving force of policies to keep America safe, Americans safe inside of this country, we should be profiling, monitoring, and creating policies to fight the radicalization of white men.
Remember I told you don't get offended? Don't get offended. Don't get offended. Don't do the, I can't believe she's saying that about white people. That's racist. I got all that. Don't get offended. Don't be offended, but be aware. Be aware that this way of thinking, this way of talking, has been ingrained over and over and over again in the left. I was going to say the American left, but that's not true. The left in the UK thinks this exact same way. Germany thinks this exact same way. These countries have decided that white men are the height of all evil. And look, you want to know why? Here's a good example. Rasmussen has a new poll out today about Trump's net approval. Trump's net approval with men, married men, 18 to 39, is 39%. That's ridiculous. Young men between the ages of 18 and 39 who are married love Trump. Unmarried women, -37% is Trump's net approval. They have decided that men in particular are the height of all evil demographically. They really have narrowed their focus to white men because, look, for a variety of reasons. One, it's how white men vote. But two, that's the demographic you can attack publicly without any response whatsoever. No repercussions at all. You can get on and say whatever you want. You can call white people evil, call them terrorists, say they all deserve to be arrested and profiled and die, and no one would bat an eye. If you said that about any other race or religion or whatnot, you'd immediately have your whole career destroyed. You already get all that. But you don't have to get offended, but you do have to be aware that that's how these people talk. Lots of them talk this way. The Jasmine Crocketts of the world, They spread this stuff.
And instead of publicly calling us the N-word, they use racist epithets and suggest that we're ghetto or unqualified or diversity hires, even though we're all more, oftentimes than not, more educated and qualified than they are.
That's quite a thing to say, but that's how she is. Hey, Jesse, I love the show. Especially love hearing about Fred since it reminds us of our dog Cooper, who we recently lost. Always needed affection and was anxious whenever someone left for even a few minutes. Keep up the good work. I hope Jewish producer Chris is kind enough to pass this along to you. Says I can say their names. Their names are Kevin and Tina. It's freaking dogs, man. They just become part of your family. It's, you know what's happened to Fred? Fred has, he now has this really weird misplaced sense of his role in the family. Because whenever he gets in trouble by one person, the other three people in the family will immediately leap to his defense. So he's never actually in serious trouble because the second someone raises their voice, everyone else jumps in and says, hey, he didn't mean to do that. It's really quite pathetic. Anyway, what else is pathetic is leaving yourself defenseless. Leaving your wife defenseless. What does your wife carry on her when she goes to the grocery store? Your daughter, did you send your daughter away without anything to stop a bad man from hurting her? Your son? Your dad? Your mom? You know the Brenna, the non-lethal Brenna? You know that it shoots over 400 feet per second? 400 feet per second. That's before the tear gas ball hits you. It's traveling at 400 feet per second. What do you think it feels like when it hits? And then that tear gas cloud goes up in the air. You will want to die, but you won't die. You will live, and so will your daughter. But she can't do that unless you buy one. They have their brand new compact launchers. They're like the size of a smartphone, and it's legal in all 50 states. Legal everywhere. No permit. No background check needed. You want to try one before you buy it? BYRNA, Byrna.com. You will find a dealer partner near you. You can go try one. Byrna.com. We still have an hour. Let's talk about COVID parents. Elizabeth Warren's a liar. More emails next.